Today's lesson is that of faith or fear. And it's kind of the staying on the idea of faith in God and reasons for faith in God, why we should not just believe God is, but why it should matter in everyday walk of life. Why it should matter in everyday walk of life. And that's what it's about today. Do we choose faith or fear as we live? In the Hebrew letter, as we read this morning, there is a reference there to Moses and Mount Sinai. And I've referenced that a few times and decided it was a great passage to be a foundation for this lesson this morning. As Moses is at Mount Sinai, you remember the people said, you know, don't let God do that. We don't want to talk to God directly. You talk to God, you tell us what God says because we are scared. And even here in Hebrews chapter 12, there in verse 21, so terrible was the sight that Moses says, I am full of fear and trembling. Moses himself was full of fear and trembling. Well, how do we deal with fear? And how does that affect us? It is in our Bibles, in particular in Revelation. It says there in Revelation 20, 1 verse 8, I'm going to read it because we was talking about by memory before coming to start service this morning. I just don't remember stuff very precisely. There in Revelation 21, the cowardly and unbelieving are there with the abominables, the murderers, immoral people, sorcerers, adulterers. Wow, that's quite a list, but I wouldn't think the cowardly or the timid, those who are apprehensive, are there as well. So this is a very important subject, very important topic. And it's something I think we can all admit we have room to grow. We all have room to grow. And so in this passage back in Hebrews 12, verse 21, where is quoted Moses saying, I am full of fear and trembling. The King James says it was so terrible at the sight. Moses said, I exceedingly fear and quake, the King James says. So it's out Mount Sinai. The fear that Moses had was of a phobia fear. So the actual Greek word is the word we use for phobia. We understand what phobia is about. And so it was so terrible or frightful what was going on. Moses was terrified. He was extremely fearful. Exceedingly fearful. He was terrified. Moses himself was terrified and even quaked and trembled. And I don't know, there's not very many times, actually I'm not sure if I've ever been locked in a phobia and a fear like that to just, because I have seen other people do that before though, and maybe you have. Something happened that was just scared you so bad, you wet your pants. You just lose control of your bodily functions. You can't move, you can't think. You're just terrified in your statue. And you see people, it's like, oh, you want to help them out of that so bad when it happens. And maybe you have, maybe that has happened to you. And Moses was by all means was witnessing the great power of God. It mentions about the wind breaking rocks in two. I can't imagine. And God is an awesome God, and it's an awful thing, an awe-inspiring thing to be and see God work. But notice, and the point I've been, I know you're probably, I'm about to change topics for you, so I know you're probably tired of hearing the topics so much here, but it was good for me at least to develop these things and talk about them. But is that all we know about God? Is His awesome power and to fear and tremble and quake and be paralyzed in His presence? And the answer is no, and I like how the Hebrew writer deals with this. Look, notice in verse 22, you know, as you read through that, right? It talks about how the blazing fire, verse 18, which so they weren't supposed to touch the mountain, that Mount Sinai, the blazing fire, darkness, gloom, a whirlwind, a blast of trumpet, the sound of words, the sound was such that those who heard it begged that no further word be spoken to them. The children of Israel said, don't speak no more, don't let him do that. They were scared. Even Moses was scared. for they could not bear the command. So even if a beast touched the mountain, it would be stoned. Right? It was a fearful sight. Notice verse 22. But you have come to a different mountain. Children of Israel were forbidden to touch this mountain, Mount Sinai. They were forbidden to go near it. God's awesome power was on it. And penalty of death was awaiting if they touched it. But we are not at that mountain, the Hebrew writer says. We are not at the mountain that cannot be touched, that cannot be approached. To be even in fear, I will submit to you as we go through this. But you have come to Mount Zion, the city of living. Notice the phraseology here, the terminology is completely different. This is a place of comfort, a good place, a wonderful place. The city of the living God, the heavenly Jerusalem, myriads of angels, the assembly, the church of the firstborn who are enrolled in heaven and to God, the judge of all the spirits of the righteous made perfect, and to Jesus, the mediator of a new covenant, a sprinkled blood which speaks better than the blood of Abel. But we are not at the mountain that cannot be touched, that cannot be approached. Our mountain is approachable. It even says we're in a different time. Turn over to Hebrews 4. If Hebrews 4 drives us home, how do we balance faith and fear? And that's what I'm going to deal with, balancing faith and fear. Notice Hebrews 4 ties this in and makes the point for me here. Therefore, since we have this great high priest, right? Jesus, verse 24 of Hebrews 12, says Jesus, the mediator of the new covenant. This is Jesus, our mediator. Therefore, since we have this great high priest, this great mediator who has passed the heaven, Jesus, the Son of God, let us hold fast our confession, for we do not have a high priest which cannot sympathize with our weaknesses. So we have this great terror and frightful sight of Mount Sinai, and here we have Jesus who sympathizes with our weaknesses, with our failures, with our struggles and our trials. He has been tested in all ways just like we are, but he did not sin. Therefore, let us run from the mountain. No, it says, therefore, let us draw near with confidence, not frightful, with confidence to the throne of grace, so we may receive mercy and find grace and help in the time of need. We have a mountain that's approachable, not like Mount Sinai, the great terrors that was going on, frightful things were going on. We have one that's approachable. We have one that sympathizes with us, that is merciful, that is gracious. We can come without apprehension. That whole symbol and everything that happened about Sinai was about apprehension, about fear and terror and the power of God at work. So much so the people didn't even want to hear it, much less they were commanded not to approach it. They didn't want to touch it. They didn't want to even hear the sounds. But now we have Jesus, a mount that can be touched, a mount that can be approached, that is approachable, that is sympathetic to our needs and desires, our trials that we come through. We have, so faith or fear. Mount Sinai, I'll switch my hand. Mount Sinai was fear, fearful. Mount Zion is approachable and sympathetic to us. Fear or faith. Notice also, because I want to reconcile this. I know in our mind we have to fear God. So Acts chapter 9, verse 31, talking about the fear of God. The fear of God is a real thing, but notice, and maybe it's not what we should think of it as in Acts chapter 9. And I've been trying to kind of establish that point. What is a proper relationship with God? And so in Acts chapter 9, verse 31, there it says, so the churches throughout all Judea enjoy peace, being built up or edified, going in the fear of the Lord, and comfort of the Holy Spirit, and they continue to increase. Notice the things that are grouped together here. Peace, edification, comfort, or encouragement, and the fear of the Lord. Well, if we talk about Mount Sinai, the fear of Mount Sinai was not this kind of fear of the Lord. So I think we see, I'm going to present that as a figure of speech. The fear of the Lord is that of a respect for God. Yes, we recognize he has great power on Mount Sinai and terrifying fear. But that's not us. That's not the church. That are not those who are his. That's not for his children. That has a place, but it's not for his children. Romans 8:15. There also, this idea of fear brought into play. And so we're talking about how to reconcile this fear of God or fear of the Lord with peace and edification, encouragement, and comfort. And how do we reconcile these? Because I think we should reconcile these, right? We have not, in Romans 8, verse 15, you have not received a spirit of slavery leading to fear again, but in contrast, you received the spirit of adoption. Not the spirit of slavery and fear, but the spirit of adoption as children, where we cry, Father, Father. The idea of a parent child. So this idea of a trembling, terrifying fear is something that is not for those who are his. It is for those who are against him. There is a time and place that will exist. But we're his children. We're walking in the light. We're walking with God. And so what should we fear? What should we fear? We shouldn't fear God. We respect God. We don't stand in terror and fright of God, though. Now, if we were on the other side of the fence, we need to be fearful and in terror because we have that condemnation coming upon us. We have that judgment waiting. But we are not of them. We're of the holy mountain, of the holy city, Mount Zion, where we have mercy and a sympathetic high priest, where we have peace, encouragement, and comfort. So walking with God in peace, walking with God in faith, and trust in him. And I couldn't help but think back, let's tie in the works of God, realizing God does. Because sometimes, I I've made this point, and I look at this different than I had before. We put God in a place where he's not really active, or we may make him out to be a passive God. But notice in Hebrews 13:21, we have a God who makes you perfect for every good work to do his will, working in you what is well-pleasing in his sight. Working in you what is well-pleasing in his sight, it says. In the Philippians 2:13. There again, a very similar passage. It's really, I would say, a synonymous passage. The same teaching word, just a tad bit different. But in 2 chapter 13, it's God who works in you to will or motivates you and to work for his good pleasure. So God is at work. He is at work. It's not just us. It's not of our own doing. God has a purpose and a plan, and we are fulfilling that in some way. And again, we talked about, we don't know what that, he don't tell us these things. We just have to have faith to believe and know as we go that he's walking with us. Now, again, we're not talking about living a life in rebellion to God. We're not talking about the Mount Sinai scenario. We're talking about the approachable God. We're talking about the God who gives us grace and mercy. We're talking about the God who in the conditions where we're edified and encouraged and built up with that godly fear, godly respect, as our and that's the category we're in here. 1 Thessalonians 3:11-13 talks about the Lord will make you to increase and abound in love and establish your hearts. Again, how? I don't know. Yes, he works through education, teaching us what is right. But it's not just us reading the word. Ephesians 4:7-11 talks about the different gifts and abilities. Also with Romans 12:6-8, different abilities we have. They're gifts of God. And I think this is here. It occurred to me that, you know, sometimes in times past we might have painted God as only working through his word. I can't concede that's the only path that God works anymore. He works through us. What is well-pleasing in his sight. In Thessalonians, to make us to increase. The giving of gifts. In John 15, he prunes. In Hebrews 12, he chastens. God is active. He's a living God. He's an active God. And I'm conscientious now of the fact that at least I, have often taught that God only works through his word today. It's almost a passive God that's kind of sitting back. He's done his work, and it's just letting it unfold now as it does. And I'm not saying it doesn't have, there's not great power. There's great power in the word, a great power in learning. And as we go about and live what we're taught. But that's not the only way God's active in this world. He opens doors of opportunities for us as individuals and for the church itself. That's 2 Corinthians 2:12 talks about opening doors of opportunity. Paul, in there, in particular, Paul there, when he's at Troas, the gospel, when I came to Troas for the gospel of Christ, and when a door was opened for me in the Lord, there was a door open there, a door was open for the church of Philadelphia. How does God do it? When does he do it? Why does he do it? I don't know, but he does. He says he does. 1 Corinthians 3, it says God produces results. 1 Corinthians 10:13. God goes about and makes sure we have a way of escape. How does he do it? Through the word? I can't apply anything how the Bible teaches me some things, but I can get in more trouble than I can find in the Bible, or at least as much, right? He's always there. God is always there. So having faith. God is our ally. Romans chapter 8. No matter who is our opposition, we're walking with God, we have an ally. So, being full of faith in the God we serve, in the Creator who is over us, who has given us direction, and who is there by our side. So in summary, there is two states that exist. We can be in a state of terror, trembling and fear, just like Moses did at Mount Sinai. Moses is a great prophet. The same Moses who was at the burning bush, the same Moses that basically argue with God about him not being able to go back to the land of Egypt and be his prophet. You know, right? God, they're not going to believe me. And God says, well, here's these gifts. Like, you show these things and they'll believe you. Well, I'm not eloquent, God. Okay, well, no, you can be. I'm with you. I'll give you words. But God, I'm not eloquent. Finally, God relents. What about Jonah? That's still Jonah. Resentful. He had a gospel message but didn't want to use it. God was even gracious to him. He had patience for Jonah. I mean, yeah, it's a great fish swallow, Jonah. His life wasn't going so well until he decided to follow what God said. There's a lesson for us in that, right? But God was there with him the whole time. But if we're walking with God, we don't need to be in this place of terror. And yeah, if we was in Moses' case and saw all these things happening, we would be, these frightful things happening, we would be scared. We would be quaking. But we serve a God who is loving, who is merciful, who is gracious, who is long-suffering, who gives us a world to live in where we're encouraged, where we have peace when we respect him, right? There's two worlds that exist that way, right? That we walk in the fear of God, if Jesus is our mediator, our go-between, he is sympathetic. So as we walk in the fear of God, that place that we're at is one of encouragement, one of being uplifted, one of mercy and grace. We can approach him without apprehension. Well, the children of Israel couldn't approach the Mount Sinai without apprehension. They couldn't even stand and listen to God without apprehension. But we can approach Jesus without apprehension. A place of rest and peace, comfort, consolation, that we have the works of God here for us. So why does that apply as we live our lives? Do we respond with faith or fear? Well, where are you in life? Are you living with God? Are you living and walking with God? Are you in line and step and sync with God? Then there's not reasons to have fear. But you know we still do. No reason to have anxiety, but you know we still do. Paul taught to the Philippians, you know, how to deal with anxiety. Jesus taught also how to deal with anxiety. in Matthew 6. You know, don't worry about these things. I love the songs that Brian sung. And if we can turn that projector back on for me. We're going to reference Brian's songs as I talk about lessons as we apply them. Thank you. Notice where he leads, I will follow. And I didn't write down the song number. Was that 545?
545, yep.
545. Where do we have faith to lead to where he leads, I'll follow? In other words, what he's instructed for us, do we have faith to go out and do those things? You know, if he's told us that baptism washes away your sins, do you believe? Yeah. Right? That's simple. What about if he says, you're going to endure trials and they're good for you? I'm not always on board with that one, right? Sometimes they're hard. When you're in the middle of a trial, it's not easy. You look for help. You look for, and you turn to God, right? You need to. You should. Where he leads, I will follow. And so the great blessing, and that is actually not, maybe it's 188 or 577. Where he leads, I will follow. I was open to that page, but that is not the one. Sunshine in my soul, it would be 188 then. I should have wrote the song numbers down as we sung them. I thought, oh, this is a good song, goes with my lesson. Song number 188. Where he leads, I will follow. Sweet are the promises, kind is the word, dear far than any message man ever heard. Pure was the mind of Christ, sinless I see. He's a great example and pattern for me. Sweet is the tender love Jesus has shown, sweeter than any mortal has known. Kind to the erring one, faithful is he, the great example he is, a pattern for me. List to his loving words, come unto me, weary and heavy laden, there is sweet rest for thee, which is the passage that is referenced at the below the title there. Come, all you are labor and heavy laden, I will give you rest. I will give you rest. Again, this is the nature of the God we serve. This is our Savior. Lean upon our Savior, and our soul is secure. Where he leads, I will follow. Faith, what is there that you have to do? What can you do? Are you hesitant to do things you know to do or can do? Sometimes it's a challenge for me to stand in front and deliver a lesson. Sometimes the material is challenging. Sometimes the material is challenging for me. And I try to teach lessons that are applicable and teach them from a perspective of education, right? To inspire, to encourage you to all of us to follow God's will. What if we're on the road to Jericho and we come across this man beat off in the ditch? Do we have courage to stop and help them? There's no command that says I have to stop and help that particular person. There's risk on the road. Today, I'd say there's even greater risk back then to do what's right, what's good. Do we have faith to do the commands? The faith to change and grow, let go of the fruit of the works of the flesh. We can live in those, and we've talked about it from time to time. There are things there that we live in, we can thrive off of them and live off of them. We have to let those go and flip the script, as it were. To live on the other side, which is the fruit of the Spirit. Producing fruit is the opposite of living the carnal life. And really, it's about is the faith to take risk. The faith to take risk. Do we have faith? And I'll tell you, we all have different tolerances for risk, don't we? If you know enough about me, I have a very, what you would probably call high tolerance for risk. I don't see things so risky myself, right? But it has to do with the experiences in my life have led me to this place. We had a farm, had livestock, and we had bought two weaned calves, which I don't, if you're not on livestock, they were just weaned. They were Brangus, so they the bull had a little bit too much Brahma in it, which Brahma is a breed that often is high strung. If you want to categorize breeds like your bulldog, people always say bulldogs are bad, but there are certain breeds of certain dogs that are just difficult to deal with. And this bull was of that style. And so me and my dad are in front of a 14-foot stock trailer with these two calves, which there's not a lot of room in there. We're pretty tight quarters. And as he's tying up and putting a halter on this heifer, who was just weaned, they're scared out of their wits, the bull decides to work me over. There ain't nowhere to go. Of course, he ain't got any traction either. And I'm probably 14 years old, and he probably weighs about 400 pounds, and he just puts his head in my chest and just starts working me over. I'm putting my hands like this, trying to keep him back. And that was the beginning of a long and difficult dealing with this little fella. Because he grew up, he did not forget that day. He would charge the fence because you were there. If you were walking down the fence, he would run and charge the fence at you, bucking and snorting and throwing his head around. And yours truly was also the one who fed him all winter long. I was run out of that pasture, I don't know how many times. And so, when you're talking about faith or fear, yeah, this guy scared me. Eventually, I started having nightmares. I would walk out the front door of the house, and the bull would be 100 yards away in his pen. He would jump out, and he would chase me around the house. You see, I still remember this. He would chase me. He would run me over before I could get around the corner of the house, and the house wasn't no further, right? It was a nightmare, right? I had a lot of them. And I finally, I finally got tired of being scared. I said, no, we done mean things to him too. It was just too easy. But I finally got out there one day with my feed bucket, and he started giving me the what for, and I started kicking him in the nose. I don't know if you think about that. That means I was face to face with this guy, kicking him in the nose. He was right there. So this little 100-pound boy takes on this 1,000-pound bull, and he begun to back up. Because I was like, it's going to be me or you. That's the way our faith is sometimes, right? We have to be pushed to a point of breaking, pushed to a point of failure before we learn our way through it. It didn't do any good, because it made me feel better for the moment. He didn't change. But when I went to college, I dropped out of college. After Debbie and I got married, dropped out of college, I had a career. I had a full-time job, benefits, and decided I want to be an engineer. And somebody convinced me I could do it. But I had a bird in the hand. So the fearful part is I've got to leave this job to finish getting this degree. Do I have the courage to walk away from a bird in the hand and leave it behind? We did. We sold out, moved to Fayetteville, went to school, and come out the other side, and it worked out. We make choices like that often, right? I know I've talked from time to time. One of the great milestones in my life was at a time in life, I was frustrated with work a little bit, but I really, really wanted to go hunting. And I've mentioned this story a little bit. And I finally got up the courage to go elk hunting in Colorado. And I did it by myself. And I was 10 miles from I was 10 miles from my truck. How do you do that? Well, there was a life of me of overcoming, of successes. I put effort into it. I knew what I had in my mind, what it would take to get from point A to point B. You know, I need to start backpacking. I need to get a tent. I need to do all these things and figure out what kind of food to eat. I even went 2 weeks earlier, just hiked in to see if I could do it. There's how to conquer faith, fear. Have faith over fear. And that is with experience. You know, and then you get in there and, okay, you can get there. What about the fact that you're all by yourself? How do you deal with that? Sometimes if maybe you go out and walk in the woods at night by yourself. Now, I grew up as a farm kid, and I did those things. I learned that early. I overcome that fear. But it's not that I don't ever get nervous about something. It's not that I ever fear something. It's not that things, I don't get anxiety. But in certain places, not all places, don't get me wrong, not in all times. I still have anxiety for things. But I've also learned in certain circumstances, I've learned to control that. I've overcome that. I've learned to put that away. And then again, I'll get in there and say, I've overcome it here, but then I let it back into my life over here. I'm like, well, okay. I overcome that fear back here. Why is it bothering me today? All right, Ross, remember how you got to point A to point B, and then you can overcome it. Fear is something, and that this is, I know this is a little bit condescending, but fear is just in our minds, in reality. How much of the time we spend worrying about and scared of things that never happen? 95, 99.9% of the time, we fear or have anxiety over something that never, ever occurs. We just thought it might. Well, there's a chance it could. I swear, I have hunted for bears for at least 15 years now. You know any bears I've seen in the woods? Zero. You ever get worried about them, scared of them? You bet I do. I've learned to control that in some way. I've seen zero. They're out there. The Arkansas mountains are full of them. There's even one in Jonesboro. That was all news last week. There's one around Jonesboro running around eating people's garbage and everything. I think, at least, I know we should all be able to say this. 545, O thou fount of every blessing, that we sung right before the lesson. O thou fount of every blessing, tune my heart to sing thy grace, streams of mercy never ceasing, call for songs of loudest praise. Here I raise my Ebenezer, hither the stone of help. Thus far, by your help I've come. Up to this point, I'm here and you're here because of the help of God in some way. How? I can't always say. I don't know. He didn't tell me. He didn't write a book for me to say, this is what I did for Ross. But I didn't get here without him. And neither did you. So, what is an acceptable risk? You have to define that for yourself. What is your acceptable risk? And I have my risk tolerance. You have your risk tolerance. The deal with the risk is there's a potential for losing something. Do we have faith or fear? Do we fear losing something? Do we have faith we're going to overcome and gain something? Or we may lose something. It's not just that there's a fear. We may lose something. It's possible. It may cost us more. But it's like the lesson for Peter. Do we try, and maybe we find out, like Albert, is it Albert Einstein did the light bulbs? Einstein, no. Edison, Thomas Edison. It always said he had failed at making his 900th attempt at making a light bulb, and he says, you know, he didn't fail. He just found 900 ways to not make a light bulb. Eventually he overcome. Eventually he figured out, and we have fluorescent lights today, not even incandescent. So what is an acceptable risk? And I think we do that every day. And my encouragement for you is to think about and to realize who God is, and that we do spend a lot of time worrying about what is not ever going to happen, because we do. The song, It Is Well With My Soul, 561. When we sing that, do we really mean it? Because the song is a powerful message. And again, and we've made this point, we live where we have security. We have security. But and I think it's appropriate to say, Jesus didn't die on the cross. God didn't create us to play it safe. He done these things for us to live and to have an abundant life. 561 says, when peace like a river comes my way, when sorrows like sea billows roll, whatever comes my way, you have taught me to say, it is well with my soul. Though Satan buffet, though trials come, it's a blessed assurance control that Christ has regarded my helpless estate. He has shed his own blood for my soul. My sin, oh, the bliss of this glorious thought, my sin, not in part but the whole, is nailed to the cross. I bear it no more. Praise the Lord, oh, my soul. And Lord, haste the day when face shall be sight, the clouds be rolled back, and back as a scroll, the trumpet will sound, the Lord shall descend. Even so, if God would come right now, can we say it's well with my soul? Can we say I'm ready? Can we say I've done the best that I can, and I walk in the light, and maybe you can't. And we want to offer you this word of encouragement to walk with us. I'm not saying, I will not say that I have it all figured out and that I've got it all right, but I know who does, and I know where to go to find it, and I'm on that road, and I know we're all on that road together, and it can be well with our soul, no matter what, because whether we're ready or not, that day is coming. That day is coming. And we want to be prepared for that. If you take your hymn books out, turn to song number 614. 614, the song that was selected for our song of encouragement, "Who at My Door Is Standing?" Let God bring peace to your life. He offers it. He offers peace with Himself. He offers the peaceful life. And as we say, we've been talking about some of those things and things that bring peace in our life, how to find peace in our life, how to be at peace with our life. Some of this is dealing with this faith over fear. We can have peace. We don't need to be fearful. We can have faith and trust in God, and it can be well with our soul. If it's not well with your soul today, make it right. If it requires and baptize you for remission of sin, puts you at peace, this baptize you this very day, and if there's something else amiss that we can help you with, we always want to be here to encourage you. So if there's something in your subject or invitation call, won't you stand while we sing song number 615.